Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
40 years ago this week, a federal judge's decision to undo decades of discrimination in Boston's public schools was put into action. The 1974 decision by federal judge W. Arthur Garrity was called court-ordered desegregation, but critics had another name. They called it forced busing. It was one of the most tumultuous times in Boston's history. Today, we have several perspectives from people on the buses and off, as our series, Boston, Busing, and Beyond, continues with this report from WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. And a word of caution, this report includes offensive language.
For those who were here and old enough to remember, September 12, 1974 is one of those defining dates in history, like the day JFK was shot or the Twin Towers fell. It was the day court-ordered desegregation went into effect in Boston. Hundreds of enraged white residents, parents and their children, hurled bricks and stones as a convoy of buses arrived at South Boston High, carrying black students from Roxbury. Police in riot gear tried to control the demonstrators. 8 black students on buses were injured. The racism was raw.
They let the niggas in.
Then the bus came in and they let the niggas in.
Who's the kind of
10 minutes later, a bus come around the corner with about 9 or 10 black people in it, and then they would run into school.
We were going to go in and throw them out and stay in.
Riding on one of the buses carrying black students from Roxbury to South Boston High that first day was Jean McGuire. She volunteered as a bus monitor.
Those kids were unprotected, and what they saw was an ugly part of South Boston. They didn't see the really great people of South Boston.
McGuire would become the first black woman elected to the Boston School Committee. And Judge Garrity's decision to use school buses to carry out his desegregation order became a potent symbol for opponents and supporters of the judge's ruling. Supporters like Jean McGuire.
It isn't the bus you're talking about. You have to be really honest. It has nothing to do with transportation. Everybody in the suburbs rides a bus to school if they're not driving their cars. And it isn't the bus, it's us. It's who you live next to. Who you think your kids are going to marry.
Are we better off for Garrity's decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He had to break the mold.
But McGuire acknowledges there were mistakes in Judge Garrity's order.
We would have never, ever paired South Boston with Roxbury as a start. It didn't make sense. There was too much enmity there. You'd start somewhere where there's a history of either the churches or businesses, sports teams, you know, things which people aren't suspicious of because there's a friendship there. You got something to base it on.
South Boston High School is 2.5 miles away and a world apart from where Roxbury High School once stood. Nearly all the students at Roxbury were black. South Boston High was entirely white, and even sports couldn't bridge that gap.
It was a textbook case of how not to implement public policy without community input.
Ray Flynn would become mayor of Boston and later ambassador to the Vatican. When busing began, he was a state representative from Southie.
Well, I remembered very well. I was right across the street here. As a matter of fact, I was here every day during that whole ordeal.
From the steps of Flynn's high school alma mater, you can hear the sounds of hammers and saws as contractors turn modest triple-deckers into upscale condos. Today, longtime residents complain of gentrification, lack of affordable housing, and parking. Now 75 and semi-retired, Flynn has lived his whole life in Southie, still an insular, tight-knit Irish Catholic enclave. He downplays the racial prejudice in his neighborhood.
There are racists and there are haters everywhere you go. You'll find them in any community. And we had a handful of them over here in South Boston. They were the people that were most reported by the press. They were interviewed by the press, and they were the most vocal.
The divisions over desegregation were more than skin deep, says Flynn. The fundamental issues were economic and class. Schools in poor working-class Roxbury and Southie were deplorable. In Southie, they lacked textbooks. In Roxbury, some didn't even have toilet seats. In 1974, students discussed who had it worse.
What's the difference what school you go to?
Because in our schools, we don't have the supplies, we don't have the books. Our desks are all crummy and our chairs all loose and everything.
Did we start the busing?
I didn't say you did.
They didn't understand the people or the neighborhoods of Boston.
Again, Ray Flynn.
If the court had only listened to the people in the black area, the white area, the Hispanic area, they would have got a different picture what these parents wanted. They wanted these windows fixed. They wanted these gyms repaired. They wanted a different curriculum. That's the kind of changes that they were looking for. You know, they have their most important possessions on the line. What is that? That's their children, their children's education and their future. Imagine making somebody, outsiders, making decision about somebody's children and their education and their future. You can walk around Roxbury, you can walk around South Boston, you'll still see many victims of the busing decision that didn't allow them to go to the school or get the education that they needed and deserved.
It was like a war zone. I just never wanted to go back to school again. I was so scared.
40 years ago, Regina Williams of Roxbury rode the bus to South Boston High that first day of desegregation. It would be her last day in public school.
I just quit. I quit school, and I had all this time on my hand. And what happened from there, you end up doing drugs. You end up getting pregnant out of wedlock. You didn't have to go to school. They didn't have an attendance. They didn't monitor you if you went to school. Either you go to school and get your education and fight for it, or you stay home and be safe and you just make wrong decisions or right decisions. All these things that affected me goes back to busing. Lack of education, lack of basic training and reading, lack of basic writing. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. You feel cheated. You don't want to tell anyone. You never learn how to write because no one taught you.
Regina Williams eventually got her GED, graduated from college, dropped out of grad school to care for her disabled grandchild, and now is studying for her real estate broker's license. She still lives in Roxbury. To the north, across Boston Harbor, in a different neighborhood, a different perspective on court-ordered desegregation.
It totally tipped the way of life in the city, and not to the good. My name is Mo Gillen. I'm a lifelong resident of Charlestown, and I'm Irish Catholic, working-class guy from Charlestown.
Charlestown was part of Phase 2 of Judge Garrity's desegregation plan. In 1975, in an attempt to avoid the violence of South Boston a year earlier, Garrity named Mo Gillen to a community council. Gillen was the only one out of 40 council members to oppose busing.
I never felt it was a racial issue. I always felt and still feel that it's an economic issue. To interview somebody like myself that's from the town lifelong, and they wonder why my kids don't go to public school, and yet the yuppies that come in with families, their kids don't go to public school, and there's no question about it.
Down the street from Gillen's home is the Grasshopper Cafe. Mo's a regular customer, and he jokes with waitress Zeta Sanchez. She wasn't here 40 years ago to see the buses roll. She came here from Peru.
I love Charlestown, and I like the people from Charlestown. They're very nice, but I don't feel like a townie yet. But my kids are townie. They're born in Charlestown.
Once almost totally white, Charlestown is now nearly 20% Hispanic, 20% black. Still more than half of the population is white, but white children make up less than 8% of the public school students. Bussing tables at the Grasshopper Cafe is Megan Dougherty. She's a townie but goes to high school in Cambridge.
I've attended Catholic school my whole life, so my parents wanted me to continue it, and they wanted the best education for me, so they sent me to private school.
How about the public schools? How are they?
Like Boston Public?
Yeah, well, Charlestown.
I think it would make more sense for me to go in my town because I wouldn't have to drive to school, waste gas every day, and it would just be easier for me to walk to school every day. But I want it to be like a safer environment, so I think they need to work on making it a safer place to be in.
The use of buses to desegregate Boston public schools lasted a quarter of a century, yet the effects are still with us. In the first 5 years of desegregation, the parents of 30,000 children, mostly middle class, took their kids out of the city school system and they left the city. Today, half the population of Boston is white, but only 14% of the students are white. Gene McGuire is still a supporter of the 1974 desegregation order, and Ray Flynn, still an opponent. They don't agree on much, except the unexpected consequences of busing 40 years later continue to define and divide Boston.
We're going back to resegregation. We have more all-black and all-Latino schools now than we had before desegregation.
Boston has become a city of the wealthy and the poor. And the school system has not improved as a result of busing in Boston all these years.
And a question can be asked, where will we be 40 years from now? For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman.